with the perspective of curiosity about what is happening in the moment as a human experience. Curiosity about what is this experience? This kind of momentum of mindfulness allows us, begins to allow us to see how our minds get caught, where there's a movement towards struggle or stress, and also how our minds move in the direction of letting go. And so it is this continuity that allows for the seeing. I would say in our daily lives, this is probably one of the biggest challenges. So yesterday there was a question around, or a comment, and a kind of a question around, I'm noticing just how little I'm remembering, how do I remember in daily life? And I talked a little bit about the intention side of the equation. When you recognize that, either that the thought arises, wow, I haven't been very mindful today. Right in that moment, there's mindfulness. And so notice that. We might not quite notice that as awareness, but awareness has come up essentially around the intention to be mindful, and the recognition, oh, haven't been mindful very much, is kind of connected to that intention. And so when that kind of awareness arises, first recognize, yep, I am aware now, and just generally take in what's here and reconnect to the intention. Don't give up that thought of, oh, haven't been mindful very much. Early on, when I met mindfulness, I basically gave up. I read Thich Nhat Hanh's book about, noticing mindfulness through the day, and I would only remember when I picked up the book in the evening. And after a couple of days of that, I gave up. And then I didn't meet mindfulness for another 10 or 15 years. But the kind of the recognition, yep, this is hard. Keep trying. Just kind of giving yourself a pep talk. Keep trying. Just keep trying. That can be so supportive, just that intention. The intention also can connect, potentially in daily life. We might kind of be curious about, so curiosity is another great support for our continuity, our interest through the day. As I mentioned in the guided meditation, when there's curiosity about what's happening, there's a very natural kind of arising of the awareness to meet or kind of connect with the experience that we're curious about. In our daily lives, I would say the conscious reminding, the first things I offered in the guided meditation around supporting continuity, remembering awareness, reminding yourself aware, of what? That is probably not going to happen so much in daily life. It can at times, I mentioned the other day, at times we can kind of have activities. We may have activities in our day where there's not a lot of need for mental engagement in terms of thinking about how to do something, like, doing something for work or planning some conversation that you need to have or writing an email. There's mental engagement there. And while doing that, the kind of reminding, well, am I aware? Am I aware? Having a conversation, reminding ourselves, doing that active reminding, as we've talked about, can get in the way of the kind of natural unfolding. And so the curiosity, just the kind of the intention towards curiosity, or the curiosity about, well, what's here? But in certain times of our day, like maybe washing dishes or some chores that we have to do, vacuuming or walking walking around our house or going for a walk, then we might be able to bring those supports in. So just knowing for yourself when those tools can be useful and when it feels like it's not helpful. It feels like essentially what I've seen is that when people try to do that in the midst of their daily lives, they essentially figure this doesn't work, forget it, I'm just going to not try to do this. So there have to be other ways in, and there are other ways in. And curiosity is one of those, I find. Curiosity around what's actually happening. One of the kind of curiosities we can explore is kind of curiosity about where the places we tend to lose mindfulness are. You know, the kind of situations, the kind of mind states, the things we really get caught by. You know, sometimes we might notice that in a moment, kind of returning, and it's like, wow, I was really lost in that right then. You know, and there's some kind of common things, I think. We tend to get lost in conversation when we're in conversation with people. We tend to get lost, maybe for some of us, in certain activities. Certain activities we do may have kind of habitual spacing out. We've kind of cultivated spacing out in those times or something. So just kind of taking inventory in your day and being curious, not to try to pull mindfulness continuously all day long, but curious about where those places where mindfulness gets lost. And then once we have that sense of, or kind of have a recognition of, oh, mindfulness tends to get lost there in that kind of situation, then there might be a little bit of curiosity we can add if we know we're moving into that situation, about what happens there. So, for instance, if you tend to notice that you get just absorbed in a conversation with somebody, or if maybe a particular person or a particular topic, and you know that you're heading into a conversation with somebody where you feel like there's going to be a tendency to get lost, then the curiosity that I would encourage, really curiosity there, not the act of trying, okay, I'm going to try to hold on to mindfulness during that conversation, but more the curiosity about what is it that's happening that kind of is the hook. What's the hook there? Where does the mindfulness kind of just pick up and leave? And so the kind of just opening to in that situation. You might have a little bit of awareness right at the beginning, maybe not even strong, but just a little bit of it. And then maybe there can be a connection to, well, let's see what happens here. Let's see if there can be a little bit of understanding of what the hook is that kind of grabs the mindfulness. So not trying to stay mindful, but curiosity about where we get lost. This is an exploration. I invite you to try it. To explore that possibility that there can be an interest in where we get lost. This is like the side of the equation around mindfulness coming and going. Mindfulness does come and go, and we often notice the coming of mindfulness when mindfulness returns after we've been lost. It's harder for us, especially at the beginning, to notice the going of mindfulness. Where is it that mindfulness gets lost? What does it get hooked to? We've talked a little bit about supporting that by getting familiar with the feeling of being aware and feeling the wobbliness of that. So that gives us a little bit of a sense of the mind kind of losing touch with really connecting with experience. So there's an awareness and a little less connection. We might feel that and feel that as a little bit of wobbliness. And so that can be a place where the mindfulness will tend to head out. But also, kind of this curiosity about where we tend to get lost, where what hooks us. That also is a beginning exploration around where the mindfulness goes. So I invite the exploration. You know, almost by definition, we don't see the mindfulness going by trying to stay mindful all the time. You know, we do. It's like, what is it that's hooking us? The effort to stay mindful, the effort to kind of keep it going, is a kind of a pretty obvious activity in our mind. There's a doing there, and so that activity of doing will keep our mindfulness at a certain level. And often the things that pull us away from mindfulness are more subtle. And so if we're kind of engaging in the doing side of, can I be aware? Can I be aware? Can I be aware? We may not really be able to see the subtler movements that are pulling us out of mindfulness. So the curiosity and the interest, the intention to see if we can see those can support our ability to notice where we get lost, what hooks us. And we can also, in contrast to situations in our lives, like conversations or events that we're doing or activities that we're doing, we can also have a tendency to get lost with particular habits of mind or states of mind. So this is another kind of curiosity about where we get lost, not just in our activities, but also, are there particular states of mind that we tend to get lost with? Boredom, anger, confusion, anxiety. And what I found for myself can be was really helpful, especially really early in my practice, was kind of in noticing a particular flavor of mind that I really get hooked by, then being curious, like adding a little extra intention at the beginning of my day. Okay, I'm not going to try to be mindful all day long, but I would really like to know when anger's happening. I would really like to try to be aware with that. And so there was a, and part of the kind of support for that was the interest. For me, at least, you know, at early in my practice, anger was like the main thing that was making me miserable. I was really interested in understanding something about this. You know, the motivation of maybe there's something in this mindfulness practice that will help me to be free of this. There was clearly some aversion in there, but there was also the kind of curiosity. Maybe this can help. And so that curiosity and that interest, the strong interest in this is something I'd really like to understand something about. Sayadaw talks about that understanding, that interest, that curiosity being aimed at the understanding, not at trying to get rid of. And so in the process of this exploration around, you know, this thing that we tend to get caught by, can the curiosity about that be motivated to understand it? Understand it rather than to try to get rid of it. And understanding it perhaps a little in the way that we talked about yesterday afternoon around the threads of impermanent, unreliable, and the wishes to be happy, healthy, and safe, and how those get tangled up. To understand the tangle, not to try to cut the tangle out and kind of put it away. Understanding the tangle allows it to untangle. So the interest there. So for myself, I kind of started with, okay, I just want to be interested when it happens, right in the middle of daily life. And, you know, just kind of would notice when I'd wake up with that and remember, oh, right, I said I was going to be mindful of this. And that intention helped to break into the habits and patterns of thought that would tend to keep me hooked. So there was, I'm kind of like, oh yeah, here it is. I said I'd be aware of this. Wow, you know, what does this feel like? Well, there's a lot of pressure, a lot of attention, a lot of agitation. Okay, that's what's happening here. Can I know that? And then, you know, and then I was in the midst of my day. And so it's kind of what I did next was just, okay, wow, well, that's a kind of a meeting of that. And I've got things to do, so maybe I can get on with my day. And actually, I found that it was possible in that moment to kind of set aside that pattern of the anger and just in a very gentle, kind way, get on with my day. And the benefit of that curiosity of just meeting in moments that pattern as it arose, touching into it, kind of then saying, yep, and I need to get on with my day, setting it aside and moving on, not with aversion, not pushing it away, but just setting it aside and getting on with my day. So much learning happened over the course of a couple of weeks and months of my practice. So much learning about how anger worked and how the suffering happened. So the kind of curiosity about a particular area of experience can support us in our daily lives to especially for areas that may tend to be something that's really sticky for us. So a couple, well, one more piece perhaps around continuity during the day, more generally. Even the word continuity and momentum make it sound like, and when I say the continuity, the momentum of mindfulness is where the understanding comes, where there's the benefit of mindfulness. We might have the idea that that means we have to be continuous, like for a really long time. And definitely that is the direction that the practice moves, that there's more and more continuity, there's more and more availability of mindfulness throughout the day. And it's wonderful when that's available. And there's a power to, I mentioned this a couple days ago, I think, bursts, what I call bursts of continuity. Sometimes mindfulness will arise, you know, just in the midst of whatever we're doing. And it will, when we become, one of the benefits of recognizing the return of mindfulness is when we're right there, when mindfulness arises, sometimes there's a power to what that mindfulness is seeing in that moment. If we're not judging it, if we're not thinking about, oh, I wasn't mindful, but we're just there, mindfulness is returning. What's it seeing? And that's not something we can do, but it's a practice we can incline towards, that curiosity about the return of mindfulness. And so that moment when mindfulness returns, just in the midst of whatever we're doing, sometimes there can be a very deep, clear seeing of something. I've talked about this moment quite a bit in talks before. It was really a seminal moment for me, a real transformative moment. And you know, those kind of moments, there's a few of those in practice, and they illuminate so much. There's so many different things that they illuminate that I end up talking about them a lot. Early in my practice, in the first couple of months of practice, doing this exploration of anger in daily life. And I will also say, just to kind of let you know, that at the very beginning of my practice, I was not particularly interested in meditation, in still meditation. I was, you know, sitting for an hour. I had a friend who was doing day longs. I thought she'd gone off the deep end, you know. And here but I was really interested in understanding the anger and why it was creating so much stress. And so I'd read this book that helped me to kind of be interested in observing it in my day. And so in the first couple of months, I wasn't sitting at all in meditation. So I want to just say that because I know from my own experience that sitting meditation is not necessary to cultivate mindfulness in daily life. It turns out to be really useful and supportive for it. And after a couple of months of doing this daily life practice, I finally thought, maybe this is why they call it practice, because sitting down makes it easier to do in daily life. That's actually why I started sitting, because I was seeing so much benefit to the mindfulness in daily life that I wanted to cultivate supports for it. And then I went off the deep end. By my own definition, I went off the deep end, going off to 3 month retreats and going to Burma to practice for 4 months. So anyway, in those first few months, I wasn't sitting in meditation. I was really just curious about noticing the anger, noticing that happened in daily life. So I was cultivating the awareness, the return of awareness with the kind of the feeling of anger. And it was like the mindfulness got very attuned to the mind heading to anger. And then at one point, I was just in my kitchen. I was doing ordinary things. I was cutting an apple. I wasn't even particularly trying to be mindful. I was just doing stuff. There was this momentum of curiosity about mindfulness with anger, being aware of anger that had been built up over the course of a couple of months. But I wasn't thinking about it at all in that moment, because I wasn't angry. There wasn't any anger. I was just doing my stuff. I was cutting an apple. And in that moment of cutting the apple, mindfulness arose. Mindfulness arose with a memory, a thought about the person that I was angry with. And there was a connection of the cutting the apple to the memory, because I remembered being with that person at a fruit stand. So there was a connection between, so there was the association, and this happens a lot. We see something and a memory arises. So that's what arose. The mindfulness arose with the memory of the person that I was angry with. But in that memory, we were having a good time, right? That the memory was a pleasant memory. The memory was a sweet memory. And so the cutting of the apple in that moment, the mindfulness arose. And I would say this is a burst of mindfulness, because in that moment, the seeing, what the mindfulness saw was the memory, the connection of the memory to what I was doing. It saw the intention or the movement or the, it felt like a freight train of like, oh yeah, I want to jump on that thought and think more thoughts in order to get angry. Because there's so much habit of being angry at that person. There was a lot of momentum towards anger there. But the mind saw the momentum towards the anger. It saw the just like the inclining towards getting angry at that person. Having spent the several months before noticing anger and noticing that how it affected me, which was to make me feel pretty miserable. In that moment, also what happened in that burst of continuity, what also happened was this, the mind seeing that intention towards anger, seeing that I wasn't angry in that moment, but that the mind wanted to get angry, some part of the mind wanted to get angry, and the mind clearly recognizing that way lies suffering. Not going to do that. And the not going to do that again wasn't something I did. It was something that the mind did. So when I talk about the mind, the system, the human system not wanting to move towards suffering, but wanting to move towards freedom from suffering, that comes from experience. The seeing of the mind, just see the kind of intention to get angry and just let it go, because it knew that was going to create suffering in the moment. So all of that I described happened in about a second or two. It was a little burst of continuity, a little burst of mindfulness that was available because the mindfulness was there was the interest in kind of noticing mindfulness around experience. And this particular burst of mindfulness rose in connection with something I had been cultivating over the course of a couple of months. So there was a momentum that had built over 4 months, but it wasn't an everyday kind of every moment kind of momentum. And then the power of those few moments of awareness, in those few moments of mindfulness. We talked yesterday, I think it was yesterday, somebody asked about how can I see intention? I said, well, we can't necessarily try to see it, but when mindfulness gets more continuous, we can see it. That's what happened in this moment. There was enough continuity for those 2 seconds. It doesn't take very long for an intention to rise in the moment, less than a second. And so if there's continuity of mindfulness for a couple of seconds in that arising, sometimes we can see those in the midst of everyday life, in the midst of activity, and a very powerful understanding can happen. For myself, that was the first moment I ever saw how the mind did not have to choose anger. I thought I was powerless, that there was a powerlessness there, that I had no choice, that those thoughts of that person would make me angry inevitably. And seeing the power of mindfulness, seeing a different condition in the mind can change the direction of the mind, that was the moment where I really understood the power of mindfulness, the power of its possibility to lead away from suffering and towards ease, more ease and peace in my life. And that moment of mindfulness returning, it lasted a couple seconds, right in the midst of my life. And so I want to kind of put out there this idea of bursts of continuity, which in my own experience have been places and ways, particularly in daily life, where a lot of learning has happened. And then in the chat, some questions about talking and being aware while texting and being aware while engaged in conversations. So this is really awareness while communicating. So I want to talk about that a little bit. It's a big area and it's a challenging area. It's a huge daily life area. It's one where so many of us do get lost because we're engaged in the content. We're engaged in the ideas of the what we're communicating. So we're more connected in a way to the content than we are to how we are. And so this notion of 360 degree mindfulness that Carol uses, or 50-50 mindfulness that Sayadaw points to, that's kind of the movement, the direction that we're cultivating. But it's challenging, because we are so habitually caught by the content, or so habitually more, we feel perhaps that the content is more important in our, not consciously feel the content is more important, but that's the act, that's what's happening, is that the habits of mind kind of put priority on the content over how we are in the present moment. So this exploration of being aware with content. We talked a little bit about this the other day, but I want to talk about it a little more, and particularly with talking. So I would say mindfulness while talking is, it's one of the more challenging areas of bringing mindfulness. It is possible, and yet I have heard, even from some of my colleagues, yep, this is like one of the last places, especially conversation, one of the last places that mindfulness really begins to enter into. And it can take some concerted practice or concerted effort. So the first piece, I talked about this, I think the second morning when we were talking about thoughts and talking about being aware with thinking, I also talked about being aware with reading and writing. So this is a first place we can begin to practice being engaged with content. So somebody asked the question about texting, how to be aware during texting. Instead, I'm who knows where in a blank space where there's only me and the ideas about I have about the person I'm texting with exist. So yeah, I'd say this is a kind of common experience. We kind of enter into the place of content and me, and maybe a little bit about the other person, but more me. And so the practice that we talked about earlier, we mentioned noticing when you get lost. Here's a place you get lost during texting, right? So that's something to be curious about. Maybe you can set an intention to know when you're texting, maybe to a particular person, if there's a particular person where it comes up. And so set that intention, and then you might notice, perhaps, oh, I need to, so with that intention, it might come up that you become aware that you're going to text the person. So you know that you're going to do that before you're in the midst of that activity. And so then being curious about, can I be there with the texting? So just remembering it. I said earlier to, you don't have to try to stay present. In this case, there are some things that might support. If you've got some space and time, it's not something that's happening in a pressured time. You might have some space and time to slow down when you approach the texting. So let's see what happens. Let's do it more slowly and see what happens. So, pick up the phone, pick up your phone and like, oh, how does it feel to even think about that text? Maybe you already have the text framed in your mind. What does that feel like? So thinking about offering that content to somebody else. And then while you start to text, maybe come into the physicality. I find sometimes when I'm dealing with my phone, really being aware, almost like, my hands and the phone are in a choreography together. Like being very aware of how I swipe and, tap and just being very gentle with the phone. So that can also support being with the experience. And then as, writing the text or speaking the text, sometimes we speak text, say it. I mean, we do have to do something before we send it, right? We have to click that icon before we send the text. So while you're speaking it, like stop before you send the text and so do this little bit of back and forth. This is the content. Oh, how does it feel to offer that content? So I'd say slow the process down a little bit in texting and see if you can kind of know how you are in connection with content. This is a challenging area for us, knowing, in our sitting, we often let go of content. And in our daily lives, we need to have this kind of blend of being aware of the content of our lives, the thoughts, the views, the expressions, the emotional connection, the relationships, aware of the content, and what I call context, the whole situation, the whole of what's happening with everyone and what's the context of, what this person is thinking or feeling and what, maybe they're undergoing some kind of a challenge. So understanding the context of their lives. So the whole of it, understanding the whole of it and how you are in the moment. So the content and how you are, all of it together. At times we may be able to slow down a little bit and feel into content and how am I? Content and how am I? And I'd say in reading and writing, that can be a little bit easier. It's not quite so dynamic. We have a say over, we have a little bit, there's a physical action that has to happen before we make that communication. We have to press that button. Sometimes that might be enough to let us wake up and be aware. Yep, okay, before I press that button, let me check in. Let me check in. And maybe that could be the intention. Through your day. Anytime before I press a text button, I want to be aware. And then maybe you forget sometimes, and maybe you remember sometimes. With that intention, you'll probably remember more than you would if you didn't have that intention. So again, using intention can be really powerful support for this continuity through the day or remembering through the day. Now, about talking pretty challenging. And I would say that one big piece I learned around talking meditation, a talking practice, being aware while talking, I had thought, I kind of had this idea about what it meant to be mindful. And that was based on how I was when I was mindful in my sitting practice. Just mindful, that the idea of practicing being aware while talking, it was like I was trying to carry my practice from sitting into doing the talking practice. And that meant to me, that meant that I needed to be aware of all my emotions and all the intentions and all the thoughts that would arise, and know that I was going to speak before I spoke, and what I was going to say, and what the motivation was. And I thought I had to see all of it. Finally, I had a breakthrough. I was at Shui U Min practicing at the monastery with Saira Utejaniya. And it was great, actually, because Saira didn't make us be in a silent retreat container. A lot of the day was silent. We were requested to be silent while eating, although we could shift into talking after we finished eating. There were times during the day, there was the afternoon juice that was offered, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and that ended up feeling like a cocktail party. Everybody would go and get their juice and stand around in little groups and chatting. I avoided that for the longest time. I went once and I just like it spun my mind out so fast that it's like I thought, I'm never doing that again. But then I kind of gained some momentum in my mindfulness practice, and I was willing to go back. And several times still, not able to be mindful. But again, still trying to do the kind of mindfulness that I did in my meditation practice. In my formal meditation practice, thinking I should be able to do that, just transfer that to talking. One point, I happened to be having a conversation with somebody who was so clearly aware while they were talking. That spurred my mindfulness. And what I became aware of was not all the details, but simply that I was aware that I was talking while I was talking. It was that simple. And that became a doorway for me with talking, to just have the hope or the intention that while I was talking, I would know that I was talking. So that is the first tip that I suggest for you in moving, exploring the possibility of talking in daily life. So that's where I began, and I practiced with that, and I could be pretty aware while I was talking. And then I had another experience at the monastery. There was a particular person that I walked with at one point, and I did find often when I walked and talked with this person that it would go on for longer than felt comfortable for me. I felt like I wanted to do it more a shorter time. And I would find that what I would do is after a little while of talking, I would say something that I would think, conventionally would wrap up the conversation and that it would end. And he didn't pick up on the cue and launched off on another topic. And I did it again, so multiple times I did this kind of like wrapping it up and trying to redirect, and he would launch off. And so that it kept going on for longer, but I was aware all the whole time. So I reported this whole thing to Sayadaw, and he kind of laughed and he said, "What you're not noticing is when your mind gets agitated when you're talking." So that became the next piece that I began exploring while I was talking. Is there agitation or is there ease while talking? Again, this is a pretty broad kind of reflection or pretty broad checking in. Again, not looking into the details of what the emotions are or the intentions or knowing what I'm going to say before I say it, just knowing that I'm talking that while I'm talking, and is there agitation or ease while I'm talking? When the agitation arose, that became a cue for me to kind of be a little more curious and potentially to say, at some points I could say, this is a little much, I'm ready to stop talking now, to make it really clear, not trying to do that little conventional way to end a conversation, but just say, yeah, there's agitation arising in the mind right now. I think I'll stop. But also I found that just simply noticing the agitation created the conditions to be more easeful. So even just noticing the agitation was really helpful in the continuing of the conversation. I could know that there was agitation and be with the agitation. Sometimes the agitation would fall away and I could just be with ease with the conversation again. So agitation or ease, that's the second piece. At times, in our daily lives, having conversations with people who aren't practitioners, we have to do it all ourselves. We're not going to count on somebody else being mindful. The first time I became mindful, I was it, the first time I really became mindful clearly in the talking practice, it was because somebody was supporting me, because I was seeing them be mindful. And it brought my awareness in. And so I would encourage, if you have Dharma friends, to practice together, to find times where you might be able to have conversations where you agree to be mindful while you're talking. At one point, I set up a mindful lunch date, talking lunch date with a friend. And we went out to lunch and we promised, our key here, we're not about exchanging, pleasantries or, details. We're really about being mindful while talking. And so to kind of have that container where we were each reminding each other in a way, just the very setting was reminding us, this is what we're doing here. So that can be useful to take times to practice being mindful while talking with Dharma friends. I'd also say that it's really helpful in your initial conversations with it when practicing mindfulness that it's a couple of topics can be useful. One is, what is it like to be mindful while you're talking? That topic will help you to remember to be mindful while you're talking. And the other is just general Dharma conversation. Talk about Dharma. That also can bring in remembering mindfulness. So when you're having conversations with friends that is practice, having the topic be Dharma, and then you might also encourage or practice together having the conversation slow down a little bit. So there's a little more space. Be willing to, not jump in immediately as soon as somebody's talking. Give space between each time somebody talks, so there can be the checking in. So again, the slowing down, practicing with it in that way, a formal practice of talking, meditation. And in daily life, we don't have to give up in our everyday conversations where we're talking to somebody who may not even be aware of mindfulness. So in those times, I would encourage the more simple. Just be aware that you're talking while you're talking. And maybe if you get to the place where you kind of know that you're talking while you're talking, you might be able to check into agitation and ease. And in that place, after a while, you might be able to know what you're going to say before you say it and know what the motivation is behind what you're going to say. But again, that will come later. It's not so much something that we can do in the faster conversations. But it is possible with this simple kind of, yep, okay, I'm gonna just know that I'm talking while I'm talking. Is there ease? Is there agitation? The continuity that builds can reveal kind of the thoughts that are formed in our mind before we say them and the reason why we're saying them. Another piece around the talking practice is being aware while listening. So, in listening, give yourself the opportunity to take in the content. So this again is a practice of taking in the content. Take in the content of what someone is saying and see how you are with it. The tendency we often have is to kind of sort of listen to the content of what someone else is saying and go into planning what we're going to say. So we're not really giving ourselves a chance to feel how we are with what they're saying. We're immediately jumping to how am I going to respond? And those responses are often coming out of unseen attitudes. So give yourself a chance to see what's there when listening.